Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Strange Pathways. I am your host, Scott Mort. I hope you're having a fantastic week. My week's been a little stressful. Getting out there, trying to find a new job. I don't want to go back to my old job, but needs must the devil drive, unfortunately. On the other hand, I have put together what I believe to be the best episode of this podcast ever. We have three amazing cases to deal with this week. Our first case is going to take us to the Republic of Djibouti. If you're not familiar, this is a country located on the Horn of Africa. It's got Somalia to the south, Ethiopia's to the southwest, the Red Sea, Gulf of Aden, it's in the east. It's a fairly important little country. It's located near what may be the world's busiest shipping lanes. They control access to the Red Sea, the Indian Ocean. It refuels ships. It is important, not just to the way Africa runs, but to the way the world runs. Our case this week is a little bit different than most, because instead of me presenting it, the witness themselves is going to present this case. This was recorded earlier in the week. Ladies and gentlemen, Chris.
Today, we are speaking to Chris, who had quite an amazing experience. Chris, how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm good, sir. Thank you for asking.
Excellent, excellent. Let's do a little bit of background. How did you find yourself in the situation that we're going to be talking about?
Well, 2014, I deployed with the 216 Rangers to Djibouti, Africa for a humanitarian aid mission. I was there for like a total of 9.5, almost 10 months. And during that time, I was on like guard duty, you know, looking at papers and other things like that. So that's pretty much how I came into this situation. Yeah.
Okay. And so the humanitarian efforts, and you're in Djibouti, Africa, the night of the incident, and we'll get to what the incident is here in a second. The night of the incident, how were you feeling? How was the weather? Was it, this is going to sound very odd, but was it an unusually good day for you? A lot of people who have these incidents, the day that they have the incidents happen has been an unusually really good day.
It was just any other day on deployment. It was, you know, at 2:30 in the morning, and so they picked me up and they said, hey, you're gonna have to go to the flight line to go pull a guard shift. And I was like, yeah, okay, whatever. So that's pretty much how it went down. You know, I climbed up to my tower and just stayed there till, you know, my shift was over.
All right. And what's the first inkling that you have that something is not normal?
Pretty much I stood up and, you know, I was looking at the airfield, observing my position, and it's just I saw this, you know, craft, and I was just like, ain't no freaking way this is going on. And I don't know if you want me to get into details right now about it.
Absolutely. Let's get into details. So you're seeing a craft. But
yes.
What is it about this craft that you're going like, that's not human?
Just the way it was like levitating. So I had a hatch, like the hatch was down, but it was like there was no wheels to it. And so you can see the craft, it was like a fly shape from above, but when you looked on to the side, it was like almost like an oval shape. So what was going on was, you know, I was observing it, and you could see in the engine compartment where, you know, like a normal like engine for a jet engine, you know, the flames would shoot out.
Right.
Well, this engine, it didn't have like a normal jet engine. It was within the inside of it was like purple and blue and pink flames, but they weren't like shooting out. It was like this lining the inside of the engine, like halfway through the engine. For about like 15 so minutes, and then I could look, you know, 20, 30 feet back, and there was this slug looking creature that was about 6-7 feet tall, about 8 feet long, and maybe like 3-3.5 feet like in diameter, moving at a, like a fast paced jog. When I was, you know, on the guard, I looked inside the cockpit of the window, and you could see this big-headed figure of a almost like a person, or maybe, you know, a small alien. I have no idea what it was in the cockpit. I couldn't really make out the details too well, but it was a big head, but a tiny, tiny body and arms, and it was just like waving at me, like, "What are you looking at? What are you looking at?" And, you know, I kept looking at it, and then when, you know, it finally had enough of me, it hit me with this like sound wave type weaponry, and it made a humming and buzzing sound, almost like a whoa, 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 whoa inside my mind. It dropped me for about 2 minutes, and you know, I was like, I grabbed my ears and my head, and I was like, ah, you know. And I got back up, and I could see it taking off, and then, you know, 20 minutes after it took off, I was greeted by 275th Rangers, one an officer, and the other a sergeant first class. I don't remember their names, but they pretty much were grilling me, saying, "Did I see anything?" And I told them no, because I didn't want to get, you know, get smoked, as in like I didn't want to have a bunch of PT, you know, for seeing what I saw. So I told them no, I didn't see anything, and they just told me, "If you ever talk about what you've seen, we're gonna kill you." But I think they were just, you know, threatening me to keep my mouth shut, and yeah, that's pretty much how it all went down.
Now this slug creature, going back to this slug, is this slug on the craft, or is it on the earth itself?
It's on the runway, on the airfield. But it's moving up towards the craft. So, when I was pulling my shift, I was pretty much sitting down, because it was like any other normal night, nothing's going on there. So, you know, I was sitting down smoking a cigarette, and then I could hear, you know, a craft like heating up, and I was like, "Oh, you know, I want to see what kind of craft it is." And, that's when I, you know, took a look at it, and then, you know, I saw the slug thing, and it was moving closer to the craft, and you can see go up to the cockpit, or I mean to the hatchet, and you know, climb up there, and then the doors close, and then I was just mostly fixated on the engine part of how it was like turning on and the shape of it and everything. So that's
it's a whole lot to absorb all at once. So I totally get that. You're kind of focusing on one thing, even though there's two or three other things happening at that time. You've got the standard gray up in the cockpit. You've got the slug on the ground going into the hatch. So I totally get you're kind of focused on one thing at a time. Just going a little bit deeper here, if you don't mind, Chris, if you don't mind. Was there any sound to this? Any smells that you smelled that were out of place for Djibouti?
No, it was there. So when the craft was heating up, and you know, the slug was going to the craft, there was no heat emissions. There was no like blowing up dust like a normal helicopter or a jet engine would, you know, like would do. It was just completely like almost silent. You can only hear like a little hum, but that was about it. But it, other than that, it was completely silent. There was no fumes, no smell to it. And it was just like in the blink of an eye, it just, it took off. And, you know, when I first saw it, I was just pretty much stood in belief and like, I was like, no freaking way this is going on. And then I kind of just laughed for about a good minute to myself. And then I started really observing everything that was going on. But like I said, I wish I could have had a phone on me, but you know, with the flight line, you need a secret clearance to go on there, and you weren't allowed to have any type of electronics or anything like that. You had to leave that all back on your clue, pretty much like a sleeping area where you sleep when you're off duty and whatnot.
All right. All right. Afterwards, the after effect of all this, do you have any nightmares, any dreams? Do you wish this would happen again to you, or do you wish it would have never happened?
I would definitely wish it would happen again because so I can get a better look at it. but other than like seeing it and you know with the sound wave thing going on, no nightmares, no headaches, nothing like that. But it was weird because I was talking to a couple of my buddies about it afterwards the next day, and my buddy Reader, who worked security for the cameras for like the air, like for the flight line and for like pretty much the whole camp, he would say at certain times of night or during the day the cameras would shut off for a brief period of time, anywhere from like 5 to like 30 minutes. He would shut off and then they would come back on, and then certain times there'd be like a higher up officer coming into the command area where the security cameras are, and they'd be like, okay, Reader, you have to turn away, you can't watch what's going on the cameras. And then he would come back into the room and then resume his job. I've been in there before and I've seen the cameras and stuff, and they're really highly sophisticated cameras, you know, with like thermal imaging and all that good stuff. Yeah, it was just nice to know, like a reassurance, like I wasn't going crazy on what I was seeing.
You weren't the only one. You may have had the top of the pyramid experience, but there were other people having lower level experiences. Did you ever hear of anybody having anything way over the top of what you saw that night?
No, not at all. Like I said, I saw what I saw. And then the two guys greeted me and pretty much grilled me and told me to keep my mouth shut. And with on the light of everything that's going on, I'm just like, I got nothing to lose. Might as well just talk about it.
Right, right. So one final question, and I do thank you for your time. One final question. Has anybody there, the locals, is there a legend? What do you think the purpose of this craft's visit to the base was? And do you think it lines up with any local legends that you've heard from that area?
Well, it was in the time that Obama was visiting the camp. And he was only there briefly, so I don't know if it was between the president and this space being, but like it was like something I've never seen before, and I still can't comprehend it to this. Well, I can comprehend it. It's just mind boggling to me to this day.
I get it, Chris. Thank you so much for joining us here on Strange Pathways. Really appreciate your time.
No problem. Anytime, sir.
Those sketches Chris was talking about, you'll be able to find those over on the Strange Pathways Facebook page. Our next case is going to take us to the early morning hours, March 17th, 1981, St. Helens, Oregon, just west of the Columbia River. At 4:03 a.m., Sergeant Russell Yoakum is going to notice a bright light that's moving upriver, easterly, and going towards the Portland airport about 20 miles away. It's not acting like an airplane, though. This light is amazingly bright. It lights up the river like daylight. Now, Sergeant Yoakum, he is absolutely 100% sure immediately that this is not an aircraft. He radios headquarters, drives on to St. Helens to look at the light from the county courthouse. He knows he's going to get a clearer view there. Now, some other law enforcement officers, Ricky Cade, Tom McCartney of the Oregon State Police, a few citizens too, they meet Yoakum at the courthouse. At this time too, Yoakum is in radio contact with Lucky 13. Now that's the CB handle of Donald Askins. Donald is in a house across the river in Washington State in Ridgefield, just a little bit southeast of St. Helens. He said that he sees the light too. Stationary, over the river, turning the whole area into daylight. There is a little bit of confusion. The officers, whenever they're observing the light, they're seeing it as bobbing up and down. But Askins, he's going, no, this light is stationary. So later on, it's proved that the light the officer saw during the first moments of the sighting from the courthouse was a man-made light. Fog created a bobbing effect. The officers realize their mistake. They turn. They look to the south. There is the true unidentified light. The light Askins is watching. It's low. It stands out starkly over the river. There are very few lights on this river. And even those lights are fairly faint. Now here is where it gets amazing. Askins hears this light emitting an eerie, loud sound. It sounds an awful lot like the sky quakes, the sky trumpets, the sky horns that we've been hearing for the last couple of years. The officers get this idea. They have a portable tape recorder. They decide that they're going to set up this portable tape recorder a foot and a half from their police radio. That way they'll be able to record the conversation. And if this light makes this sound again, they'll be able to get that too. Askins says, hey, I'll hang my CB microphone out of the window. The police then drive to a nearby high bluff, gives them an amazing view. 30 minutes was recorded on tape. I'm not going to play the entire 30 minutes for you, but what you're about to hear is the conversation between the policeman, Lucky 13, and then you're going to hear what could be the sound of a craft from another world. Wrap that around your mind. You are going to hear the sound of an object not of this earth.
Hey, Lucky.
Where did it go to? Up to the river or what?
like the sun is coming up. Better not be. It's awful early. Awful early for the sun to appear for July. I don't think the sun would just be in that one spot. I think it's more without you guys. I don't want to watch it. We moved up to a higher vantage point, so you tell us what it does. Well, listen.
That chilled me. No explanation has ever been given. Yoakum and Cade said that the light was spherical. It didn't show any structure. Cade said that it was orange-red. Yoakum, light orange. It was hovering about 80 to 100 feet above the river, reflecting light off of the water. Those who saw it estimated the size of the light about 30 feet in diameter. It was investigated. They rolled out the moon, because the moon was in the wrong direction. They rolled out a drug smuggling boat, because why would a boat light up the area? They rolled out hallucination, because there were too many observers. But let's talk about the sound. The sound was analyzed. It displays two strong peaks at about 1,000 and 3,000 hertz. There are no even harmonics in the sound. Whenever it's played backwards, the data does not change. This caused a huge buzz in the local media. There was no answers. And while I think people like you, me, we hold on to stuff that doesn't give us answers, if the public doesn't get an answer, it dies pretty quickly. Everyone wants an end to the story. But I don't think the story should end. I think this is one of the most fascinating cases, because here we have real, tangible evidence that isn't a photograph. This is sound. This is different. If somebody was going to fake this, they would rely on visuals. The fact that it was sound, that was good timing for the train behind me. The fact that this was sound really, really piqued my interest in the case. Our last case comes to us from theshadowlands.net. This was by Swoo2. Now, Swoo had posted on Shadowlands before, but they did want to share another of their experiences. This tale happens whenever the witness was young. they can't remember quite when, but they're thinking this was whenever they were 11 or 12 years old. They were on vacation in the northern part of Arizona. There are a lot more trees, mountains in that part of the state. The family was camping one night, and Swu decides to wander off on their own. It was about 12 a.m., give or take, when Swu sees something very, very odd, unlike anything they have ever seen. What they saw was one thing and its opposite all at the same time. It was solid, but transparent. Friendly, yet angry. Even the smell, it was lovely, but decaying. The sound, beautiful like the sound of a harp, and creepy like a pipe organ. It's at odds with itself. What Swu saw was definitely female. Her hair was gold. She wore a red gown. Swu said, red as blood. And it's a red that Swu can't really describe because it was still transparent. This woman was wearing black gloves, black boots. And she is beautiful, perfect. Absolutely perfect. Swu feels like they're in love. But then, the woman turns around. And that feeling of love fades very, very quickly. Because this woman has no face. The woman starts to walk towards Snoo and starts to sing, give me back my face, over and over. Snoo said it was like those were the only words that she knew. The voice was beautiful. It was a beautiful, angelic voice. But Snoo turns around and runs, screaming. But then Snoo opens their eyes. He never moved. Snoo was still at the very same spot. And the faceless woman is still there, right in front of him. His head was up to her chest. All he can see was her necklace. It was a gold chain with a triangle-shaped charm. With glass, maybe a clear crystal, diamond-like center. This creature, ghost, entity, it still continues to sing, give me back my face. Snoo doesn't know what to do, and just stated, I don't have your face. At this point, the entity starts screaming and yelling, give me back my face! Snoo turns around and runs again. And the same thing happens. He goes nowhere. But this time, there's no faceless lady staring at him. All that's left is a dusty, scratched ring laying there on the ground. Silver. Strong. Three holes around the inner side of the ring, spread evenly. The amazing thing to me is, Snoo still has the ring to this day. I don't think I would have kept it. Thank you for joining us again on this week's Strange Pathways. head on over to the Facebook page. We're going to have sketches from the encounter at Djibouti. We'll have a link to the audio, the full audio of the Columbia River sighting. Thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for getting the word out there about the podcast. It really does me good to see those numbers rise, to see more and more people talk about this. Take care of yourselves and each other.